former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a fresh hour of the Lombardi Line back from downtown Las Vegas. I'm Ben Wilson from our Circa Sportsbook studio. A lot of Olympic action on behind me right now, Michael. A lot of good stuff for us to get into as well in hour number two. Matt Youmans will join us, one of our many contributors to the College Football Betting Guide. And as always on Thursdays, we get Mike Pallman here for a full half hour, VP of Operations from Circa, the Golden Gate, and the D. We'll start this hour, though, with Michael Lombardi talking what is on Michael's mind. We are both locked in watching that USA-South Sudan match. I said, you know, the South Sudanese never in danger of not covering yesterday's 30-point dogs. They lose by 17 to the USA, but it was more known for who did not play yesterday. That was the big storyline coming out of that win for the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I think Steve Kerr said it well. I mean, it was going to be a track meet, and you couldn't put Embiid in the game because the guy doesn't play. He's not in condition to be part of a track meet. You know, you could say, well, that's unfair to him. Well, he's not a low-post player. That's the thing that's unbelievable. He's not a low-post player. He rarely goes into the low post. And so if he can't play in a track meet and he can't play around great players, he's had probably one of the worst Olympics of anybody on the team. And this is the point I've been arguing about for 7 years. He's a great talent, but he's a horrible teammate. It's really hard to build a team around him. It's hard to do anything. And I think this Olympics has exposed that. I think people in the – I get a bunch of texts from people now that are all talking to me about Embiid. They didn't realize he was like this. Well, if you pay attention during the season and you don't buy into the mass media perception of how great he is, you see that he's very awkward in terms of playing a game to win a title. So that's what's been on my mind. I think the 76ers, before you put the bet on them because they have Paul George and Embiid, you better think twice about that.
What we saw yesterday reflects exactly what you're saying, because Bam Adebayo, a much more nimble, big player who has the ability to run the floor, and Adebayo was awesome yesterday getting out in transition and taking advantage of there was still a size mismatch, like there will be a size mismatch in basically every game for the U.S. in this Olympic, no matter who it is against, really with the exception of if they face France purely from a defensive perspective down low with the Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama combo. But Adebayo was awesome, 8 of 10 from the field, and Steve Kerr also adding that, look, this is about winning a gold medal. This is not looking at social media and tapping into the soapbox of the NBA regular season. I thought that was a very important distinction to make, and it's, you know, for a guy like Kerr, who clearly has been worn tired of all the drama and the day-to-day dealings you have to deal with as an NBA head coach, clearly this seems like the place he likes the most, right, from the perspective of, all right, we have one goal. You can set everything else aside, cut out the BS, and let's go ahead and win a title.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's face it, Kerr's got a hard job. Managing these egos isn't easy. And telling these guys they can't play, that they can't play against everybody. You know, I think to me it becomes embarrassing, right? You know, I got to believe Embiid's embarrassed the fact that he couldn't play. You know, and you know, Kerr's honest, and he was truthful when he said that, you know, the game was too up-tempo for him, and I think that's right. And now how does he respond to that? I think that's the question.
Sure thing. Steve Kerr and the USA, 2-0 now. That not the surprise. They do fail to cover, though, against South Sudan. That was a very respected move there to South Sudan. South Sudan, they can say, 2-0 against the number against the USA now in the two meetings they've had between the exhibition and then yesterday. We'll have more discussion. Might get a Mike Palm's thoughts on what the Olympic betting, the handle has been like. All the events right now behind me here in the Circa Sportsbook, which has been a really good place to watch all the action as it unfolds live. Golf underway today, which I'm pumped about. We're also down to the semifinals in the tennis, which is great, too. Really locked in there. But the bigger story for us today, at least at VSiN, it is the College Football Betting Guide that is now out, Michael, officially. I have some best bets in that guide, too. We talked Big 12 earlier. I want to throw a couple of thoughts at you here as far as some team and some win totals here. I'm looking at the Big 12, where if it's a conference with as much variance as this league here in the Big 12, I want a team who has experience. I want a team who has very, very good defense and proven playmakers on that side of the ball. And Iowa State, to me, Michael, checks both of those boxes. A group that has the single most returning production of anybody in all of FBS. If you look at the top four teams in returning production last year, going from 2022 to 2023, they averaged a little over 3 wins more in 23 compared to 22. Not saying that Iowa State is necessarily going to go from 7-5 to 10-2 or 11-1, but the pieces are there with a quarterback in Rocco Beck that got unbelievably better in the second half of the year, threw for over 400 yards in the bowl game, and a defense that ranked second in the Big 12 behind only Texas, who is now out of that league and into the SEC. It's a very favorable schedule, too, for Iowa State, a team I really like to go over that 7.5 win total.
You know, I love it because I think Iowa State's one of those teams where I think when you look at schools like Iowa State, you always everybody expects them to just get over the hump and stay there. I think it's hard to stay over the hump in schools like that because, you know, the recruiting. This is what's so remarkable about Iowa. Everybody wants to make fun of Kirk Ferentz, but the fact that, you know, the three teams that have won the most in Big Ten play are Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa. All he does is keep winning. And I think when you break down Matt Campbell, he's a really good coach. A lot of pro teams have been interested in Matt Campbell. And I think he'll get this thing turned around. And, you know, they've gone through a little bit of a lull after Purdy left. But I expect them to come right back, you know, with the team they have around them, the improvement on defense, and his ability to coach.
I wonder if the win total as well, not maybe fully baking in one of the road games, I put road games in air quotes here, Michael, because they take on Kansas, but that is not in Lawrence. It's a Kansas team that is undergoing renovations to their football stadium. That game will be at Arrowhead, and you kind of think, based on the fan bases, it would not be a shock whatsoever to see at least half the crowd there, Iowa State fans. So you kind of pseudo-eliminate one of those road games. You call it probably a neutral site game, if we're really being fair. But outside of a road trip to Salt Lake and Rice-Eccles Stadium at Utah, you know, rest of this schedule, very, very manageable, where you get a lot of the better teams in the Big 12 coming to your own building. And a couple of those road games against Houston, who is dead last on the odds board to win it all. West Virginia, not a ton of hype around the Mountaineers this year, despite that being a tough place to play. And you do get K-State at home to end the season. Very realistic that you would go into that November 23rd and November 30th two-game stretch. It is very, very much a possibility to go into that home stretch at an 8-2 mark heading into the final two games.
But that Kansas game won't be easy. I mean, you know, they've got 13 starters back. I think Lance Leopold does one of the best jobs. He won at Buffalo. You know, the quarterback Daniels is back, you know, and he's only played in 12 games over the last two seasons. But he's a very good player. I think they're very talented in how they coach the team. You know, he does a great job, Leopold, and getting his team ready to play. There are no pushovers, right? They go into Illinois in week two, and I promise you they'll give Illinois all that they can handle, even though Illinois is a Big Ten and everybody thinks Kansas is kind of a pushover. I don't. I'm not saying they're going to win double digits. I would play their under total because, you know, you got a hard time. What did they set at 9 this year, Ben? I think to me, under 8 is the total, right? So 8 wins, finding 8 wins on there is hard. Yeah, they can beat Landon Wood. Could they beat UNLV? Yes, they should. Mm-hmm. You know, now you're into a certain area where it could go one way or the other. Okay, Baylor could be an easy win. All right, there's 3. Tell me where the other easy ones. Arizona State. Okay, that's 4. Where else are they getting easy wins?
And that's not even indicating or factoring in the fact that you have a quarterback in Jalen Daniels who struggled to stay on the field, and there is no more Jason Bean, who was a very experienced veteran backup there for KU. I love Lance Leipold as a coach, as a Wisconsin guy, I watched what he did at Wisconsin Whitewater, a D3 powerhouse, and in large part because of Lance Leipold. But it is a lot to ask, especially with all the renovations, a lack of depth, especially in that offense, to expect them to be more than an 8-win team coming into 2024. That was probably my most wild card selection, Michael, as far as the Power 4 at least. I do really like Oregon this year. That is a team that coming into the year there's so much pressure right on Ohio State opposite them. And those are, in a lot of regards, power rated teams number 2 and 3 this year in the entire country. We're already going to see Ohio State have to go to Eugene, Oregon in the regular season, a game that is attracting betting interest on the Ducks around a pick 'em right now. But I love what Dan Lanning has been able to do, bringing in no matter what quarterback it's in to his system. You've seen immediate results. And I expect the same thing for Dylan Gabriel. I really respect the huge move that we saw in the Heisman market. Gabriel went from third or fourth favorite now to co-favorite, or in some shops, the outright favorite to win the Heisman this year in that 8-1 or so range. And I certainly believe Lanning will have learned a lot from late game clock mismanagement that, for a more seasoned coach who had been in those positions before, you probably would have been talking about Oregon potentially in the national title game instead of a Washington when you think about how close the Ducks were in a lot of those spots. Lanning, to me, Michael, has to have learned from those situations and mistakes in the past, and certainly have to like what he's getting in a player in Dylan Gabriel, who has the arm strength but also has the elusiveness and the quickness to really work well in that system.
No question. Will Stein does a great job as the offensive coordinator there in setting it up. I mean, we saw it last year with Bo Nix. I mean, he went from Auburn. We weren't sure he was even a prospect to the 12th pick overall in the draft. So credit Oregon's program there. But I think where Oregon is a Big Ten school is their front, the ability of their offensive and defensive lines to take games over. And look, they run the football too. They can power you. I agree with you. Lanning's a good young coach who's only going to get better as a decision maker in game. But, you know, we think there could be three, maybe four Ohio State-Oregon games this year on the docket.
Yeah, easily with the 12-team playoff now being expanded. Like UCLA, I don't want to, you know, beat the dead horse here because that has moved a ton now. It's not worth betting now that a lot of shops have gone to 4.5. Some have some fives, heavy juice to the under. But it was not Deshaun Foster's press conference, Michael, that had me soured on UCLA. Like, to be perfectly clear on that. I mean, it's a brutal schedule. You lose so much. Now you have a head coach who's never been in that position before. I have huge doubts. And in general, you know, unless it's an Oregon, right, that has the infrastructure, I'm going to be very pessimistic on a lot of these teams in the Power Four going to new conferences this year where the schedule is totally different and where the rosters have had tons of overhaul. Unfortunately for UCLA, they have both combined with a head coach who's never been there before.
Yeah, I've got questions about Deshaun Foster. I mean, the guy's never been a coordinator before. He's in a leadership role that I think is going to be really hard. And Eric Bieniemy is going to call 7,000 passes and get his quarterback killed like he did Sam Howell. And they lost their defense coordinator over to USC. I think UCLA's program isn't going to be very good. I really don't.
Tough year, most likely, for the Bruins out of Westwood. More to talk about on the college football line of things with Matt Eumanns, a big contributor, as always, to our guide. We'll have Matt coming up right after this on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Who will win the Heisman Trophy? Who will be in the College Football Playoff Final Four? Which teams will surprise and which teams will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered by downloading the newly released 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Detailed team previews, picks, and best bets from our writers, hosts, and personalities are just a few clicks away by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not only will you get the College Football Betting Guide, but also our NFL Betting Guide and an all-access pass to daily best bets, plus full access to our exclusive betting splits. You can check out all the current offers right now at vsin.com/subscribe. A huge contributor to the guide, Matt Eumanns. We've got him right now, Michael. Pumped to get Eumanns on, as always. We'll get some thoughts, too, on the Hall of Fame game for tonight as we go out to our progressive guest line. Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN tonight, usually up at all hours, but he is up right now at 2:15 Eastern. That underdog cashes there, Eumanns. This is usually nap time for Matt. I'm happy you're awake right now. I know you're excited, too, for the Hall of Fame game tonight. As much as we won't see any of the starters really go here for the Bears, what are your expectations, at least to see in the preseason, that have some questions I know you certainly want to see answered there on the Chicago side of things?
I don't think we're going to get many questions answered tonight. I'll tell you this. I was up all night watching the Olympic golf tournament, but I'm fired up to have football back. And, you know, even when you have a battle of backups like you're going to have in Canton, Ohio tonight, it's still the NFL. This is what we live for in the sports betting world, and it's going to be great to watch it. And because it feels like the long, boring summer is finally over, and now we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. But, you know, Tyson Bagent did start some games for the Bears last season. He's going to get to start tonight. I think you have a pretty good quarterback rotation for the Texans, starting with Davis Mills and Case Keenum and some guys who can play. It's interesting because the last 2 years, the Hall of Fame games barely slipped over the total where you had high 30s in points and you had scores in the fourth quarters of those games. In the previous two Hall of Fame games, really low scoring games with 19 and 24 points. I was going to play under the total of 33, but that total got hit before I could bet it, and down to 31, I left it alone. As of right now, believe it or not, I have no action on Bears-Texans tonight, so I'm not sure if I'm going to do anything with it. But I will tell you, I got a future play of some sort on the Bears. I played the Bears under 9 wins, and I'm not a big believer in Matt Eberflus as a head coach. He's got a long way to go. And Caleb Williams is going to make some sensational plays. He's also going to make a lot of mistakes this year. A rookie quarterback. And I got some questions about the offensive line in front of him. And the Bears, the first two-thirds of their schedule is pretty soft, but the back end is loaded. In fact, all of the Bears' division games are between weeks 11 and 18, and they got to go 10-7 to beat you on this win total. Under 9, I think, is a really good bet. I could see the Bears getting 8 wins, possibly 9. I can't see them getting the 10. So that's the only play I've actually got right now in the NFC North.
Hey, Matt, what's your overall strategy when it comes to betting the preseason? I know you wrote a column about it, but share that with the audience.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different angles to look at, Michael. And one is coaches who want to win. You know how that is. How much game plan information is going to be released and in terms of how many starters are going to be played. But I love to analyze the quarterback depth charts, and I put a story up on vsin.com about that today. I went through all the rosters and put the depth charts together. You're not dancing with the stars in these games. You're betting on the backups, and we're going to see very little frontline starting quarterback action here in the preseason. So you have to know the personnel and the backups, how much time those guys are going to get, and who can Michael, a big key in the preseason when you're betting it is with so many backup offensive linemen on the field, you get a lot of plays to break down. Which quarterbacks can make something out of a broken play? Which quarterbacks have running ability, can get outside the pocket, make something happen? Because a lot of times that makes the difference in these games. You know, which quarterback can run and make a play in the third or fourth quarter? And those teams are going to win games more often than not. I went through all the depth charts and, you know, looked for the teams I felt like had the best quarterback rotations for the preseason. And I found a few that I feel like have the worst. And, you know, that'll be a starting point for me when I handicap the preseason.
Well worth your time checking out that article at vsin.com. All of the depth charts for different NFL team quarterbacks for the preseason from our Matt Youmans, who's with us right now in our Progressive Guest Line. Let's go to the College Football Betting Guide out today. You were tasked with breaking down the Big Ten here, Matt. Just on our last segment, we were discussing, you know, how to differentiate between Ohio State and Oregon, two high-powered teams at the top of that league. What do you make of that battle for the top there, what clearly seems to be a 1A, 1B situation heading into this year?
Well, the Ducks might actually even have a slight edge in this. And the reason is they've got the best quarterback in the Big Ten, in my opinion, and Dylan Gabriel. And also, they get a home game against Ohio State. So that's going to be obviously a monster game in the Big Ten when the Buckeyes have to go to Oregon. And so you kind of get a leg up there with Dylan Gabriel and a home game against the Buckeyes. Other than that, I think both teams should win at least 10, probably 11 games when you look at the schedules. I think these are both legit national title contenders, and I'm not going to recommend necessarily a win total play on the over because one thing goes wrong, teams might go under a total like 10.5, but these teams look extremely strong. You know, I really do rate Oregon right up there with Ohio State and Georgia at the top of college football, so I don't think you're going to find much of an edge there trying to bet those win totals. Those teams look so strong.
Well, you know, I know you spent a lot of time in the Big Ten. Is there a sleeper team you think the under total win total is too low on?
You know what? There's a lot. There's 18 teams in this conference, and I put a win total opinion up on each of them. I'll tell you what my best bet is, Michael, and it's the Michigan Wolverines under 9, and it's not a sleeper team. It's a national championship team, but I think the betting public expects, well, Jim Harbaugh's gone, but this Michigan machine is just going to keep cranking out wins. I don't see how that's going to happen. Harbaugh took some coaches with him to the NFL. Michigan had 13 players drafted, the most of any college program. Only 7 players who started games of any kind last season, these are not full-time starters, come back. You've got a new quarterback you got to break in. Offensive line's unproven. Wide receivers are young. It's going to be a new-look defense with a new coordinator, Wink Martindale, who comes from the NFL. This is not going to be the number one scoring defense in college football like it was a year ago. Michigan starts the season with 5 straight home games, but Fresno State, Texas, USC in that group. If you just take the 3 top 5 preseason opponents that the Wolverines play, Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State, if they lose those 3 games, the best they can do is 9-3. Michigan's going to lose a couple other games along the way. Got a road game at Washington, like I said, and Ohio State's a road game. There's some of these spots on the schedule you think, well, that's going to be a win for Michigan. Hey, this program's basically starting over. New coach, new quarterback, new coordinators. I think it's way too much to ask to say that Michigan could go over 9 and get to 10-2. I think 9-3 is the best case scenario. That's why I really like Michigan under 9.
Even worth laying a little juice on that -135. Current odds there for Michigan with Matt Eumanns joining us here, host of VSiN tonight. Weeknights at the network. One team you are a little bit higher on than the market, at least from a win total perspective, will go to the Iowa Hawkeyes. Finally, you get rid of the nepotism hire, I guess we could, I know I'm putting words into Iowa's mouth, but let's call it what it is. With Kirk Ferentz's son, Brian, being the OC, he's now gone. You bring in Tim Lester. What do you expect to see now in a very new-look Iowa team that finally hopes to be looking like a 2024-esque offense in some sort of fashion when we see them on the football field coming up this fall?
You know what a miracle was last college football season? Iowa had the worst offense in the nation and still won 10 regular season games. I don't know how. Obviously, we watched the games. It was defense. It was special teams. It was the defense and special teams setting up scores or scoring, and that's how the Hawkeyes were able to go 10-2 in the regular season. Now, in the final two games against Michigan and Tennessee, they got outscored 61-0. The offense was inept. Brian Ferentz did get dealt. I'm not going to make excuses for him because he was a poor offensive coordinator. But Cade McNamara, the transfer from Michigan, was injured early in the season, and Iowa did not have a competent quarterback to back him up. McNamara's back. LaShawn Williams, one of the top rushers in the Big Ten, is back. You've got a typical Iowa Hawkeyes offensive line, big, strong, four senior starters, one junior. Defense that allowed 14.8 points a game brings eight starters back, two of the best senior linebackers in the Big Ten. Jay Higgins, Nick Jackson, these guys are going to play in the NFL. I really think that Iowa's going to be one of the top three defensive teams, a much improved offense. And how about this schedule? No Oregon, no Penn State, no Michigan. Mm-hmm. Get home games against Washington, Wisconsin, Nebraska. I think there's a good chance Hawkeyes are going to be favored in 10 games. Not saying they're going to win them all, but I think they're going to win at least 8, probably 9. I like Iowa over 8. That total was 7.5, and it was bumped up to 8 recently. But I would still play the Hawkeyes over 8.
At Matt Eumanns 247, where you can follow Matt Eumanns. Also, be on the lookout. Those annual fast food rankings coming out next week. I was back in my home state of Wisconsin, Matt, where Culver's, always a perennial powerhouse, resides.
That's the truth, buddy.
Great to see you as always, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It. Matt Eumanns with us here, Matt, on the Lombardi Line. When we return, it is a Thursday on the show, Michael. That means Mike Palm. He's in studio. We've got Palm's Pressing 3 coming up in 15 minutes. We'll go around the dial, talk some different topics with Mike, see if there's any action he's seeing from Circa on the Hall of Fame game for tonight when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Our final half hour of the Thursday edition, Lombardi Line, August 1st, 2024, with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. Next couple of days, Mike Palm is here. After what's been a great show so far, Mike, you're rolling right along. We're excited. Football back tonight. Olympics, you guys have a lot of it out in the sports book.
Yeah.
Great setup.
Simone just got
Simone
finished.
Biles?
Yeah, just got finished with her performance. A lot of great tennis.
Yes.
Being played. Golf. Exciting stuff. And we haven't even gotten to the track and field yet. So I know my wife's looking forward to that, especially the women's side of it.
Very good. Okay, Mike Palm is here. Yes, Michael.
How's the handle on that, Mike? How is the handle and how hard is it for you guys to handicap and set the number in some of these things that we rarely see unless it's every 4 years?
Well, so the answer is we don't in terms of these niche sports. We really don't. The most niche we've gotten is posting all the American wrestlers, yes, no, to win gold. Otherwise, we're just sticking to the main sports. You're right, Michael. It's too hard to handicap. I mean, what are we going to be doing here with the badminton and I don't know that we would do any handle. So far, by far, tennis is the biggest, right? But you've got those daily matchups.
Yeah.
Followed by soccer, followed by men's basketball. And just in terms of handle overall, those have been the big movers. But tennis has been very strong in the Olympics.
Sure. I'd say anything that, bettors are generally betting anyway, and now you transition right into an Olympic sport will make a lot of sense. Even on a sport, say, like men's basketball, right, where wouldn't you say, you go back to that exhibition the U.S. had against South Sudan, odds makers are just guessing on that. I mean, you have no idea. You've set it at 43 and a half. Now, as a result, you probably couldn't have adjusted it too much just because people know what the original line was. I mean, South Sudan clearly should not have been a 30-point dog, and they, again, were very comfortable in covering that. Not sure what sort of action you saw there, but that probably highlights more than anything just the difficulties of trying to hang these lines.
Yeah, we lose small to it, but yeah, right, what do you move it? We move it 13 yeah. points, and it's still not enough. Was your original handicap that far off? Right. It's hard to. It's just like when you're betting endgame, you have to take an advantage of that. The algorithm is still going to favor the preflop number and work off of that. So even if what you're seeing is the preflop number was completely wrong for whatever reason, it's going to cling to that until late into the game where spots you can take advantage yep. of.
Yeah. Let's go towards how about as we get into the track and field? I mean, do people play that? I mean, the 100 meter, all that yeah. stuff, or people, because it is timed, right?
Yeah.
And you can handicap the racers.
Yeah. And the women's sprints are going to be tremendous. Obviously, Jamaica and the U.S. have a great rivalry there. And the individual Americans in the races that aren't relays. We'll take a lot of action. So I expect there to be really good track and field action as we get into next week.
Good stuff. Handball is underrated to me. Beach volleyball is awesome.
But beach volleyball is very good.
It's really good. Yeah,
it's excellent.
The indoor, there's not, you know, you don't get the rallies. Indoor is just essentially just a kill, you know. It's all it is.
Well, but, right. I mean, if you're passing it back, you're losing the point.
Yeah, it's right? all. Yeah, you go for an ace on the serve. If you don't get it, yeah, you're done. Yeah, highly recommend to you. Yeah, Circa, great setup here for watching all the Olympic sports since we've got about 18 different channels of action on right now. We'll be curious to see as a result of going up against, you have the Olympics going on, that we have the Hall of Fame game tonight. Mike, we did see a flip of favorites here after the news came out. No Caleb Williams, nor will there be any of the Bears starters here for tonight. Now, Texas now about a point and a half favorite. Looks like total, too, getting some action to the under here, which is not a shock considering past Hall of Fame games.
Well, Steve Mackinnon did an excellent write-up on this game a couple days ago in Bill 80's newsletter that comes out at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific, saying the wrong team was favored, even if Caleb Williams was playing. The moment Eberflus announced he wasn't, we immediately flipped it, and we were taking all the bets on the Texans. We're up to two now, 1.5 at DraftKings. But, I mean, these preseason games really, forget about who's starting. I mean, the majority of play is going to be third string and fourth string, maybe some second string. But handicapping the whole quarterback rotation is as important as anything, I think, Michael.
Yeah, no question. And it's handicapping the offensive line, right? And so that's the bigger issue is, like, how do we handle the – who's going to get – who are they going to be able to make plays? Who can come in the game? And Matty Eumanns had a great line. It's like, who can make the second play when the play breaks down? Who's going to be able to make the play? And you know, the numbers have gone down so far to 30. I think you almost have to think about, you know, looking at the above, I mean at the over, because it seems to me like, I mean, yeah, and I think the new kickoff rule tonight is going to be fun to watch. But I also think the new kickoff rule could allow, because there hasn't been a lot of contact in practices, it could allow somebody to break three and make a play.
You know, I'm torn on the new rules, Michael, and how it will affect totals, because I agree with you that I think the kickoff rule will make the long returns more probable. It's very hard to run a kickback in the modern NFL. But now with being so stationary and not having the deep coverage, you know, you miss a tackle and it's all in this scrum. Look what happened in the rugby match where the U.S. wins.
Yeah.
She essentially has a 99-yard touchdown with no time left because she broke the tackle at the line and there was nobody behind. And then she just outsprinted everybody. But on the other side of this, challenging the play clock favors the defense, because obviously the defensive team has the option to wait and see if the offense has made a good play. We see this happen, what, 3 to 5 times a game where they get a snap off where it's clearly at zero? Well, now the defense has the knowledge of knowing what the play was, whether they want to challenge it or not. So that's got to favor the under, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I saw that rugby play, immediately that's what I thought of. I thought of the kickoff, because once you break it, it's over.
What
it's
an awesome
done.
Moment, though. That was so cool. One of the moments of the Olympics so far. That was the bronze medal winning play for the U.S. As time expired. It also, you know, leads into, for the rest of preseason. We will get into that more as the, now basically next week will be a lot of the lines coming out there for preseason action. We can transition as a result, Mike, to some college football. And we'll talk about this a little more tomorrow when you're in here. College Football Guide is now out. I'll bring out some of these fun stats because I know Mike will appreciate it. We had a couple of oddball kind of out of left field selections. Brent selects Houston to win the Big 12, who are dead last on the odds board. And Jonathan Von Tobel selected UNLV, the only one to take UNLV in the Mountain West. Although that one there, 5-1? That's not as crazy.
I don't know that that's as big of a step out as Brent had with Houston. Look, I think Boise is clearly the best team. But I think the trickiest game comes when they play that Friday night game here in Las Vegas. I actually think Colorado State might be the second best team in the Mountain West. But that being said, Odom's done such a great job with this program. It's all about replacing the quarterback, right? If they can replace the quarterback, they can compete with everybody. Now, Boise's going to be really tough to stop. They got four offensive linemen back. You've got the player of the year and the running back back, your quarterback back, and you bring in two stud wide receivers. That's a really tough team. I bet Boise to make the playoff. I firmly believe that if Boise is a one-loss team, with that loss being at Outson Stadium, and Liberty runs the board, Boise will get above Liberty. The rest of the public disagrees with that. They're betting Liberty down and down. We were less than $2 to make the playoff the last time I looked here. But they play nobody, though.
Liberty's schedule, it's a joke.
And I do believe the committee will look and look at that disastrous game against Oregon that they played on New Year's Day last year and say, do we want more of this?
Yeah. I think that's going to have an impact, Mike. I mean, because it's one thing to rack up a bunch of wins against inferior competition. Even the Liberties lost their quarterback, right? Didn't he transfer out of there last year? You know, oh no, James Madison. I'm sorry. The James Madison quarterback transferred, and he was playing well. So, look, I agree with you. I think it's hard to say we're going to put Liberty in because they're undefeated when they know they're going to get killed. I mean, it's not a game. And it's the same thing that happened to Florida State. If you don't have your quarterback, how do you get in?
It's tough because we now know the committee is judging you based on the current makeup of the team and not just the resume, which is what they used to leave Florida State off last year. Although, you know, many people thought you just have to go by the resume. But obviously they looked at the chance of them being competitive. The basketball committee does that, though, too. Looks
all
at the current
time.
State of the team, and if your stud is injured and you're a borderline team, you're not getting in.
Yeah.
They downgrade you to what the state of your team is going to be in your next game.
And that's what makes the now expanded playoff, the 12-team and the committee, the selections have to go in there, all that more fascinating. As far as the Big Ten, we just had Matt Eumanns on. He is bullish on the Iowa Hawkeyes. We have our favorite Iowan here at the network, Mike Palm. What are your thoughts on the Hawkeyes now that you finally go into the modern era of offense, presumably with the new OC and Tim Lester?
Well, here's the thing, and I wasn't sure Iowa was fully committed to it, but now Jack McCaffrey, who's got one more season left at Iowa City West, has committed to Butler. So I guess Iowa really is all in against nepotism. Now how's that going to play out? I mean, the offense has got to be an upgrade, and you get McCarthy back. I mean, it would have been fun to see what he was like against with that defense that they had, because that defense they had was as good as anybody in the country. You look what they did against Michigan. Now, if you had McNamara and that offense last year and that defense last year, I'm not sure that they, you know, maybe they don't win 11 games. Now you get him this year. Wes brought up a good point this morning, and I was almost going to put this in the pressing three, Michael. And maybe if we have time, we'll get to it, though. But the biggest loss for Iowa was the punter, who is now with the Bears.
Isn't there? I thought there was a new Aussie punter that came in that apparently Kirk Ferentz is even just as high on as the previous one.
Here's the thing I say, though. You know, the kid's 24, but isn't he really like 29 with the leg of an Iowa punter?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a great way to lead into the Palms Pressing 3, which we'll have coming up on the other side right after this.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look website, VSiN.com, Matt Eumanns, a full breakdown on the NFL preseason quarterback depth charts. Well worth your read ahead of the Hall of Fame game first preseason game tonight. Adam Burke, Steve Mackinnon have their breakdowns, all sorts of trends, and other key facts you need to know for the Hall of Fame game tonight. We also have best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, tons of Olympic coverage, along with all the betting tools and betting guides like our college football betting guide that is out right now, all on VSiN.com. And it leads us into our final segment. Here we go.
Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
Such an honor for me to be on Palms Pressing 3, Michael.
Remember Michael's advice from the last time you were here. Okay?
It was.
All right, question one, Michael. We open with the Hall of Fame game tonight. The NFL preseason certainly looks a lot different than it did when you first entered the league, Michael. So here's a two-part question. In what ways is the current format better or worse for coaches in preparing their teams for the regular season? And in what way is the current format better or worse for bettors once the regular season begins?
Well, let's start with the coaches. For the coaches, it's worse because there's really no contact. You're limited in practice. You're limited in the amount of reps you can give players. Remember, when I started in 84, we had two-a-days. Walsh didn't really use two-a-days. We had a long practice in the morning, 8:30 to 11:30, full pads, very physical. Walk through at 2 o'clock, usually special teams on the other days. But it was a long, grueling day. Not the case any longer. So it's hard to install everything. And September is an extension of getting your team ready, especially from a physical contact standpoint, because it's harder to evaluate without the pads on. It's harder to evaluate without having contact drills. The good part is you're trying to cut down on injuries, which doesn't seem to be happening. We still have the same amount of injuries. Guys break an ankle, guy has a non-contact ACL, Achilles, all those things. So from a coaching standpoint, I think it's more challenging now than it ever was. There's no time. There is no time to really understand what you're dealing with, and there's room for mistakes. From the betting standpoint, again, there's no time. We really can't handicap these teams because we've cut down the preseason to three. And we know that guys don't play in the last game, and we know guys barely play in the first game. So we really won't have a look at some of these young players to see kind of what influence. And there's so much misinformation that comes out of camps. For example, Tariq Cohen having a great camp. He's back to his way. Oh, by the way, he just retired. So you got to be really careful. Today, Colin Cowherd said on his show that, you know, Joe Milton could beat out Drake May. I don't care how bad Drake May looks. He's going to look better than Joe Milton. Ask anybody from Tennessee who's watched games. Like, Joe Milton's a very athletic player, but he's not going to beat out Drake May. Not now, not tomorrow, not next year. So, like, you've got so many bad takes that come out. It's hard for the better to get a good, accurate portrayal of what's happening, which makes it very hard because we can't use our eye test to examine what we're seeing. So that's really a challenge.
All right, question number two, Michael. Over the last month or so, we've delved into several different betting markets during the Pressing Three, including Coach of the Year, first coach to be fired. I want to talk about this interesting market, at least for me now, for a quarterback to take the first snap for a team. Now, let's throw out the Raiders because that's sort of been a coin flip all along between O'Connell and Minshew. But of the others that were favored, all of them have really gotten steamed up, whether it's Brissett or Darnold or whoever, except one. And that's Bo Nix. Bo Nix's odds have actually come down. Now, you were so good on the draft with Bo Nix. Are you still confident that Bo Nix will get the start in week one for the Broncos? And now that the odds have come down, is it worth a bet?
Yeah, I'm very confident. I mean, unless Bo Nix has really done a bad job every day at practice, I can't imagine that. And it's not throwing the football, it's mentally handling it. And I just don't think Jarrett Stidham or Zach Taylor is going to beat him out. So, yeah, I'm very confident in Bo Nix. I think if Sean was panicking, we would probably hear it. You would hear some rumblings. Oh, they're not having a good camp. Jeff Legwald, who's a very good beat reporter out of Denver, would be saying some things. I don't get that sense. Look, the way Denver won games last year was they played better defense. If you take the 70-point game out of what they gave up, especially the 350 yards rushing against the Dolphins in that game, their defense was pretty good when they're healthy, and I think they can be. They want to run the football. They want to control the line of scrimmage. They need more production out of their run game. Williams needs to have a better season than he did last year coming off the ACL. But I think, to me, Nix is the guy because I think Sean's going to program him to run the offense the way he wants it run.
All right, question three, Michael. Now, last year, I was very bullish on the Cleveland Browns, more than any other team like I am this year on the Bengals. And we cashed the Browns over ticket and to make the playoffs. And we cashed the over. I was sitting with Ben Wilson.
I remember that.
The over in the wild card game because they were on the road. But to me, this year, they're a very difficult handicap. Obviously, in a tough division, I just can't make sense of the defensive home-road splits. How could there be that much of a dichotomy? Is the crowd noise that responsible in Cleveland for the snap count and getting up, that the splits could be this different? And the other thing is, I'm not really bullish on Watson coming back to form and being an elite quarterback in the NFL. Please provide your handicap on the Cleveland Browns.
I'm down on the Browns, and I was up on the Browns last year. I thought they had a better chance, but there's been no indication from Deshaun Watson that he's going to turn the corner. He's played 12 games there. And, you know, his yards per attempt has been 6.5. He just doesn't throw it. Now, people will say, well, you know, the second half of the Baltimore game, he was much better. I'm not ready to say that. I think, to me, I really think that was a problem. I think he's been a problem in terms of making plays and connecting with his teammates and doing all those things. As for the defense, when you break it down, I mean, look, this is a team that, you know, they forced as many turnovers at home that they forced on the road. It's just the points that they allowed, and the protection wasn't as good. And I think the older defensive linemen on the road didn't play as well, and people took advantage of them. You know, this was and the other thing that's fascinating about the Browns defensively, Mike, is this was the worst red zone defensive team in the National Football League, the worst red zone team. But they were the best third down team. How do those two things make sense? They really don't. 71% of the time, teams scored when they got the ball touchdowns in the red zone, but they only converted third down 29.1% of the time. So those two things go against each other. And then they were a bad first quarter team. They really, teams game planned well against them. And in the fourth quarter, they really couldn't adjust. They didn't have enough scheme. They gave up 107 points in the fourth, 107 in the first, 107 in the fourth. So the splits are interesting, but I think at the end of the day, they don't have enough talent in the defensive front to dominate like they did. And I think there's a luck factor that went into some of their games playing at home. I'm not buying them. Look, losing Callahan's going to hurt them. Stefanski's already said he's calling plays. They brought in Ken Dorsey. The front office meddles around everything. So I'm just not sure that in the North, they're going to be the best team.
You were just telling me, Deshaun Watson, you guaranteed, you know, at like quarterback 15 play, you would be so much higher, but you can't.
He had one good half?
Basically.
Since he's come back to the league, he played one good half. Michael, let's get into that other question that I sort of talked about. Torrey Taylor goes from Iowa, gets drafted by the Bears. Sensational job. We talk about how a place kicker can affect a game, and we really don't talk about punters or how good your punt coverage is or the ability to make teams go the long field. Can Torrey Taylor be a significant factor in the Bears' success this year? How important is a punter in today's NFL?
Well, he fits perfectly with the Bears because the Bears are going to play a bend. They're a zone concept defense, right? They want to create a negative play, get you in a long down distance. But where they really want to specialize is forcing you to not make a big play. They're going to play zone. It's hard to throw the ball over their head. And so if it takes you eight plays, they're saying to you, you'll mess up one of those plays. You'll screw it up. You'll get in second and 14 and we'll win this. I think that's what happens. I mean, you know, that's really where you want to play on the long field. That's what made Baltimore, you know, with Justin Tucker not having the great season last year and them still scoring as many points. Because with Tucker, if they got the ball, once they cross the 50, you're looking at 3 points. You call the defense differently. But with the punter controlling field position, it's huge. We don't talk enough about it, but it's huge because it takes you longer to score, especially if you're a team that doesn't make explosive plays down the field.
No doubt. Bears, can't wait to see the punting on display tonight.
Oh, there will be.
There will be punting. with the Tyson Bajan experience out there today. I enjoyed my second installment of the Palms Pressing.
We're together the next 2 days,
and we're
aren't
together,
we?
Yeah. All right. Excited for it, Mike. Yeah, it's going to be a blast. We'll be up early watching a lot of Olympic stuff. Great show as always, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Ben. I'll see you on Sunday, Ben.
Beautiful.
We'll let them go to Dallas and do that scout.
Yeah, of course. You know what has to happen.
Gluttons for punishments, these guys are Cowboys fans.
All right, up next, it's Sharp Money here on VSiN as we wrap things up on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line.